Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for staying with me today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Wherever you are, however you're listening, whenever you're listening, we don't care. We're just glad you're here because we've got some important things to talk about with our good friend Walter Olson. Walter is senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He's also the author of one of my favorite books, The Rule of Lawyers, How the New Litigation Elite Threatens America's Rule of Law. And also, if I had helped him write this book, I'd have put another subtitle under there, and Hurts Small Businesses. I would have had to have stuck that in there. Walter, welcome back to the show.
I'm glad to be back. Thanks.
Next time you write one of these books, let me know and I'll help you with the subtitle, because we got to get and hurt small business in there somewhere, because there's a litigation tax that small businesses pay, and I want to talk about that in a minute. We're going to talk about the class action lawsuit in a minute. I also want to get your thoughts on the bankruptcy bill that's going through Congress right now. But before we do that, I want you to, if you don't mind, to talk to us a little bit about something that happened over the weekend, and I only talked about this for like a minute or so yesterday, but I'm still upset about this, Walter. As you know, four people are dead, and four innocent lives are taken, and for no reason, absolutely, totally, 100% preventable, because when this guy went off in this guy went off in Atlanta and overpowered a deputy and shot those four people in the Atlanta courthouse, and then three people in the Atlanta courthouse, then one down the road when he decided he needed another car. Walter, that was totally preventable, wasn't it?
Well, you have to ask, when a prisoner wrestles the gun away from a guard, and you find out that the guard was 5'0", 51 years old, a petite grandmother, very nice lady, I'm sure, but the question is, if you've got a prisoner being guarded under those circumstances, why aren't you hiring a 200-pound, 30-year-old, beefy guard? And there, unfortunately, is a legal answer to that, which is that for the last 20 years, law enforcement agencies and also fire departments and sanitation departments have been sued for trying to use strength tests or strength requirements to hire only the strong applicants. They get hired saying that it's unfair to women because those tests have what the lawyers call disparate impact. Not as many women can pass them as men. Mm-hmm. And the litigation has been successful, and you wind up with a very real change in the nature of who gets hired by these outfits. This case in Atlanta was far from the only one in which petite police officers have had their weapons wrested away with horrible consequences. Now, readers may remember that there was another wrinkle. Some said, well, why wasn't he handcuffed in the first place? It turns out mm-hmm. that there is court precedent saying that it would be unfairly prejudicial to the jury to see the defendant in handcuffs.
It's my understanding, though, Walter, that that goes all the way back to 17th century England.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I'm sure there are arguments for that. If they want to say that, then I want to be extra sure that they are using beefy guards, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, if the guy's not going to be handcuffed, I want two 200-pound guys on either side of him. And neither one of them armed.
And so you have a chance for debate about this, and yet if you look at the existing situation, New York City and other police departments have had to retain and even to hire in the first place police applicants who were obviously out of shape, you know, could not
right.
pursue fleeing suspects and all the other things.
Or carry a victim out of a building or a partner.
And it's terrible on the fire things because I've got here the numbers on San Francisco after they had gotten through their litigation. When it started out, they asked fire recruits to carry a 150-pound sack up a flight of stairs. Sounds pretty reasonable to me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as of the end of the litigation in the late 90s, they could drag a 40-pound sack across a smooth floor. I call
That's it
a per-child policy because you have to hope you're mm-hmm. a child if you're in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Folks, this is a case of political correctness run amok, and as a result, at least four people are dead, four innocent lives that should not have. I'm so mad about this, Walter. I am so angry. And I want to know if anybody's going to be prosecuted for this. Besides the man who did it, who did these killings, somebody in Atlanta should be prosecuted and tried and convicted and sent to jail for this kind of negligence. And I don't usually get this upset about things like this, but I am. 20 Till, stay with us. We're back at 17 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Walter K. Olson, the author of The Litigation Explosion, the author of The Rule of Lawyers. He's senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Walter, as we went to a break, I was going off on a rant there, and I'm still mad about this all these days later, and about what happened in Atlanta. And Walter, I understand that it's no individual's fault over there in the sheriff's department or whoever's in charge of this situation over there, if they're required to hire somebody because of some litigation that's happened before, some politically correct litigation that's happened before that's made them that the law has passed that made them to do that, but no law told them that they couldn't have two or three guards on this criminal who I shouldn't say criminal because he hadn't been convicted yet, but this person was being charged for rape. He was being tried for rape. The week before, he had brought a improvised weapon into the courtroom. The judge knew this guy was dangerous. He was concerned about it. He actually said, "Would you please make sure?" I mean, I'm paraphrasing, obviously. I don't know exactly what he said. Please make sure this guy doesn't hurt anybody. So I still think that there's negligence, serious negligence on the part and bad judgment that I think, I'm not sure, isn't prosecutable against some of the people who were in charge of that over there.
Yeah, I doubt in practice that it would be prosecuted, but you raise very good issues, and I sure hope the investigation can get to the bottom of it.
Well, it breaks my heart, Walter, to think that these four people had to die so dramatically and so horribly and so innocently in order to make a point that maybe could become a precedent in how we do this the rest around. Isn't it a shame that sometimes people have to die before we take action the right way? It's very sad. Walter, let's change the subject. I'm going to get off my soapbox here. Let's move over to the class action law that was passed recently. Talk to us about that.
Well, you know, it does two main things to the class action landscape. First, it cracks down a little on the settlements that benefit the lawyers, but it's not clear whether they benefit the class. It tells judges to take a look at so-called coupon settlements where lawyers are getting millions in fees and they're not taking coupons for that. But you and I get a coupon for $3 off the next lawnmower we buy.
Right, we got to make another purchase, though. We got to buy another one of the defective...
Usually those coupons are of dubious value because if you didn't want to deal with that company again, often you get no benefit at all. And, mm-hmm. of course, they're sending us coupons all the time in the Sunday newspapers and that sort of thing.
For free,
for free. But, so that's... And the result of that one is a mixed bag for business in some ways, because it cleans up the system, makes it more honest and more the way law ought to be. For some businesses who are currently getting away with settling their class actions cheaply, they may actually have to put out some real money to settle, and right. they're not going to like that. But it still makes
Walter,
the system more honest.
Help us, for those who might not understand what the new law is doing exactly, explain to us the part about going from state to federal.
Well, that's the second part, and that's probably more important.
So the first part is to say that they can't really, you know, we're not going to settle for the coupons anymore.
And a couple of related things about lawyers selling out the interest of their clients.
Now, the second part is venue, right?
Very wide ranging. The class action system up until now has allowed lawyers very wide scope for what's called forum shopping. That is, they dream up a national class action, and it, more often than not, it is the lawyers who dream up these things, and then they go looking for the clients.
Right.
You've got a class of everyone who's dealt with some national business, and it includes people in every state, typically, and most counties.
I've received those envelopes where they said, you're a party to this case.
Yeah.
And I didn't even make a claim.
And what they do then is they locate a client who lives in a special court, a little county court where the judge used to be practicing as a class action lawyer and is in tight, you know, got campaign contributions from the class action lawyers, and is going to give them extra special treatment. And a large share of the nation's class action litigation went on in a few rural counties in a few states. There's no logic to that except that the plaintiff's lawyers knew they were going to get a great deal.
Jury shopping, counties. They called it. Jury shopping.
Well, in most of these cases, never get to a jury, so it's judge shopping more than jury shopping. And the law blows the whistle on that, and it directs a lot of the cases into federal court, provided they are national controversies where they're representing consumers from coast to coast and against an out-of-state defendant. These cases belong in federal court, and generally will go there under the new rules. Now, it's not going to totally prevent the lawyers from shopping among federal judges, but that's not nearly as dangerous. The federal judges are not being elected with campaign contributions from the lawyers. The federal judges are, there's much more quality screening that goes on there, and you can appeal up to the federal system.
So, well, and it stems the tide of the predatory practices of the trial bar.
Yeah, exactly, because there are legitimate class actions. There's no doubt about that. There are also class actions that are nothing more than shakedowns, where the lawyers know they can shake some money out of a business by threatening the cost and the uncertainty and the reputation and all the rest of it. And it's going to help in curtailing that second kind of class action. And I don't think it's going to do much harm to the meritorious ones. They will still be able to go forward.
Right. Walter Olson, stand by. We're going to take a quick break, folks. We'll be right back with Walter. He's the author of The Rule of Lawyers, available wherever books are sold. And he and I are going to talk about this a little bit more. And I'm going to ask him about the bankruptcy bill, which actually is about to pass, I think, very soon. And we'll do that right after these messages. It's 10 till. Stay with us.
Well, I was moving down the road in my V8 Ford. I had a shine on my boots. I had my sideburns low.
We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate. Walter Olson is our guest. Walter K. Olson, OLSON, is the name on the books that he writes, The Rule of Lawyers, also The Litigation Explosion. And The Rule of Lawyers subtitle is How the New Litigation Elite Threatens America's Rule of Law. And in Jim Blasingame's version, it also says, and hurts small businesses. But you won't see that on the book at the bookstore, by the way. That's another version we got coming out. Right, Walter? Give us your website,
private
Walter.
Edition.
Yeah, they're probably exactly very private, I'm afraid. Give us your website, please.
My main website is overlawyered.com.
I love that URL, overlawyered.com.
I've also got one at pointoflaw.com, which I do with the Manhattan Institute. A little bit more serious, a little bit more oriented toward what can we do to fix the system.
Right. Okay. Now, I want to save some time for the bankruptcy bill, but I want to ask you, Mr. Bush is not through with the tort reform. He's focusing on some other things. What's going to be next?
Well, left over from last year, there's he's going to push on medical malpractice. The votes don't seem to be there on that one. Sorry, doctors, at the federal level, although the states are doing things. He also wants to push on asbestos, a huge issue for all sorts of businesses, including many small ones.
That's a case that's gotten out of hand, too, isn't it?
Oh, fantastically out of hand. And you can be, and you talk about the ultimate small business nightmare. I hear from little local companies that were, for example, wholesaling building supplies back in the 1940s and 50s, and they get named as defendants. And thousands of cases, no particular showing that they were sophisticated actors who knew about asbestos problems.
Right.
But it is enough to destroy not only very big businesses, but also small ones, too.
Well, also, what about the garages that do tire brickwork?
That very, very heavy area of litigation. And you've got to...
Where a small business garage that has men turning brake linings that have asbestos in it, you know, they all of a sudden they get a letter that's saying that they're part of this suit.
Yeah, well, you know, it used to be thought that if you followed the same business practices as everyone else, that was kind of a legal defense. That you know, today's standards are different than the standards of that time, but you don't get hanged by the neck for following what everyone else was doing
right.
in your line of business. That won't save you, unfortunately. And so you have a quest for deep pockets that can wind up emptying out some pretty shallow pockets.
Aren't they trying to come up with a trust fund for the asbestos case?
They're trying to do a trust fund. It is very complicated, and there's endless bickering about who should contribute what. But people realize, including a lot of people on the union side and the plaintiff's side, that the current system makes no sense. It eats up so much of the money. It takes so long to get paid if you genuinely are sick. It should be possible to do a lot better than that.
Right. So we got medical malpractice. We're going to keep. I know he's going to keep working on that, and hopefully they'll get the asbestos thing resolved. I think that trust fund makes a lot of sense to me. Let's talk about the bankruptcy bill. Now, that actually has passed the Senate, right?
Yeah, I think it's considered certain to be enacted into law now because they passed exactly the same versions, I believe.
Is a bill they've been working on for 8 years. It was the first public policy issue I covered on this show in '97, and it's just now being passed.
In intense lobbying on it, the bankruptcy bar, the lawyers.
There is a whole bar, folks, of bankruptcy lawyers.
Just
a whole sector.
Yeah, the very large one, and they have been.
By the way, they wouldn't come on my show. I invited them to come on my show and talk about it and to debate it, and they wouldn't do it.
Lobbying very effectively. Well, you know, there are some good arguments on both sides. Our system ought to make it possible to use bankruptcy when there is no alternative and make a fresh start. Even so, the rise in the number of consumer bankruptcies led people to the conclusion, I think a reasonable conclusion, that it was because the law had been changed earlier to make it easier and that it would be possible to catch some of those ones, especially the ones with high income debtors, the ones who could afford to repay.
Right.
Now,
Walter, let me say one thing real quick. Folks, there are some people, I have had bankruptcy lawyers tell me that they filed bankruptcy, Chapter 7, where all debts were absolved for as low as $900.
And
instead of Chapter 13, which is where they would have to pay some of it back over time.
Yeah, you've got heavy advertising of these bankruptcy law practices in many cases. And for a small business person, if one of these people happens to have you as their creditor, it would be an enormous bite. Again,
exactly.
It may be unavoidable if they really can't pay.
Right.
But if they can pay,
it makes a lot of sense. It's not taking away bankruptcy from them, folks. It's just making them go to Chapter 13, more of them, I should say. Thank you, Walter, for being here. Good job today. Walter Olson, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.